Our friends from Healthy Bud just launched a new exciting product, and our dog Zippo has been absolutely obsessed. Their mini training treats are packed with superfoods like lion's mane, reishi, and salmon oil to support brain health. And with over 500 treats per bag and just one calorie per treat, you can rest assured that you're providing guilt-free taste and nutrition in every bite. To grab a bag yourself or a few, head over to us.healthybud.co and use our code FP20 to save 20% on your first order.
Welcome to the Family Pups Podcast. As you know, this is where we have discussions about the most common dog behavioral and dog training issues. My name is Charles, and I'm here with my wife, Tanya, the founder and head trainer at Family Pups. So I know usually we do certain dog training issues, the most popular ones, and we have discussions about how to remedy that. But I thought I'd take today in a slightly different direction. And so what I'd love to discuss is, what are the major ways that people have learned throughout, let's say, their childhood or through culture, how to train their dog that are now a little bit misguided, a little bit outdated, a little bit misinformed, and a little bit dangerous? So I would love to go into a little bit of that, because I know you, Tanya, kind of go into a lot of people's homes. And people have these conceptions on what is right to do in very specific situations. And so let's talk about some of that.
Sure. Yes, let's talk about it. And hi, everyone. It was interesting. I actually was having a conversation with this young man who is in college. And he was telling me how his roommate got a puppy. And it seemed like that puppy was anxious. He or she had some issues with being left alone, and when being left alone, because the dog is not used to it, then the dog will have a potty accident. And how those boys will manage it will be to rub the dog's nose into the accident. And when I heard that, it really kind of dawned on me that there is still so much outdated advice that even young, educated in other ways people are still kind of using and haven't gotten the message that those are things that we don't do anymore. So I was hoping that if we could come up with just a few of the most popular, outdated, and as you said, potentially dangerous advice that is still out there. This way we can bring some light to those and help some people adjust their behavior and approach to those accordingly.
Great. I'm glad you mentioned that. So let's kind of paint that picture. So let's say I come home after a long day. Maybe I just got a new puppy. And I come home and I see that the puppy had a potty accident, let's say on the carpet. And so for me, from my standpoint, I'm like, well, I can't let this continue to happen. And then I know the dog is going to kind of just look at me and is just so happy to see me without even an iota that of an indication that they did anything wrong. I could understand the instinct right away to be like, I need to tell this dog that I didn't like what they did. And so in certain circumstances, from your experience, it seems like some of them are like, okay, well, the one thing I know is I'm going to take this dog and smush it into their potty accident to let them know this can't happen again. Why doesn't that work? I feel like I have to do something, because if I don't do anything, then isn't it going to happen again?
Well, that doesn't work because the accident has already occurred hours ago and the dog is not capable of making the connection that you rubbing their nose into the accident is the negative consequence of them potting on the floor. This is why. And I asked that college boy that I mentioned if that helps, and it doesn't help. So then shouldn't we try to do something else that would help instead of doing the same thing that is now causing more fear and anxiety instead of helping?
Yeah, and I have a lot of empathy too, because I think when people open that door and see the dog have a potty accident, they look in their drawer of their brain for solutions on what to do, and they only have one solution, which is that outdated solution. And so if that doesn't work, then what do you recommend they do the minute that they open the door, at least to manage that in that moment? Like, what are they supposed to do?
I will go with approach something that is more of the category of predict and prevent. So if this behavior is a pattern, if the dog has separation anxiety and that's why they're having an accident, we'll need to work on addressing the separation anxiety and teaching the dog how to be alone. Or if we left the dog for too long and they weren't capable of holding their bladder, then we may need to consider, well, can I hire a dog walker or ask a neighbor or a friend or take them to daycare so that their needs can be met? Or can I get fresh patch or something else that I can use in order to provide my dog with an outlet?
What's a fresh patch?
Fresh patch is a subscription box of grass that you receive. We use it for puppies, but you never know. Maybe if you have a smaller breed dog and they have to stay alone for longer and their small bladders can't take it, providing some space where they can potty that is not depending upon you being there to take them out will be the better option. There will be some work that needs to be done on the human end too, right?
Yeah.
It's about us having been triggered by something and actually working on changing our behavior. Can we, instead of getting angry or upset with seeing the potty accident on the floor, can we find compassion because our dog was distressed and they didn't have control over their body and this is how they express their stress? I think if we want to, we can really get into the habit of looking at it differently and this way adjust our approach as well.
Yeah, I think we have to see what responsibility that we have in, you know, potentially causing that potty accident too, right? Because if I left my dog alone for a significant amount of time, 8, 9, 10 hours, whatever, then we can't be mad that they go potty because they're going to have to go potty eventually. So I guess my biggest question here is, what is, you know, and of course it's going to depend on age, but what is kind of a rule of thumb of like how long a puppy or a teenager or an adult dog can be left alone where you can be reasonably assured that the dog will not have to go potty during that time, according to you?
Oftentimes, the answer to this question is depends, but 4 to 6, 8 hours, I think it's really pushing it. So I'm just gonna pinpoint 4 to 6, but not for puppies. This is for older dogs mm-hmm. that have developed their bladders.
Anything else in regards to, you know, I'm sure that was a big one for you. Is there another one that you notice?
Yes. So since I work with a lot of puppies, from time to time, the advice of pressing their tongue or cheek into their teeth when they bite comes up. I've seen it when I've been doing research, you know, and what's out there. I've definitely seen this advice. I've seen a YouTube video of teaching you how exactly to press the tongue of your dog's cheek against their teeth as a consequence of biting. But I do not think that this is a good approach to puppy biting. First of all, well, let me break it to you. If you have a puppy in the age group of 8 to 6 months, they're going to be biting. So if you really hate biting, maybe get an older dog. Second, it's not their fault. They're not doing it in order to be vicious. They're not doing it in order to attack us. They're doing it because, you know, they have energy, their gums are hurting, they're trying to interact with us. So we, instead of causing pain for the pain that we felt, should figure out what other ways or alternatives we can use in order to engage them.
So if I heard you right, the puppy starts, let's say, biting my ankles or biting me ferociously and I want it to stop. So a lot of people are pushing in the dog's cheek so the dog can bite him or herself, and maybe that might be a deterrent for that dog to bite. Is that what they're trying to do?
Yeah, you know, with old school, outdated advice that is focused on punishment. Yes, so the idea is that the puppy is going to feel pain as a consequence of their bite, and this way we'll be hoping that we'll be decreasing the behavior. That doesn't pan out well because puppies will be biting naturally. So whether we cause them pain or not, they'll still be biting us.
Yeah. And it just reminds me that these theories or these things that we do to prevent these things from happening, you know, we learned that from someplace, right? This idea that pain is a good way to let people know that this is not something that you should do again. Maybe that's from the military or whatever, but I think a good way to always look at it from my standpoint is, would we do these things to babies, right? Like if we look at, of course, babies and puppies are not the same thing, but we would never use these tactics on a baby because they're crying or they're doing something that maybe displeases us in a little bit. We would never take this approach, but maybe because we see them as a different species, that we have almost this different set of rules for them.
Yeah, maybe a different species, but it's still a baby. Mm-hmm. So you would not want to like start off your relationship with the baby that you brought as a companion by causing pain and fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then unpredictability when it comes to the interactions with you, which can cause bigger issues in the future.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point earlier, which is punishment can only be quote unquote effective if the dog or puppy knows why you're doing it. But you can't communicate to this dog. And if you, let's say, going back to the prior example, smush your dog's face into their potty, they have to know like why you're doing that. Because from their standpoint, it's very possible. They're like, this guy is crazy. He's just shoving me into this. Why? Did I do something wrong? And I don't know. But that must be quite traumatizing, especially for a young pup.
Yep. And also, dogs don't have the concept of right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's more of a human understanding and a label. So a dog is just doing a dog thing. And here we can go into another one, since this is something I encountered yesterday. So another advice from a dog training company was to spray a puppy for biting with a bottle that is filled with water and vinegar. Mm-hmm. So again, here we see that the bottle is causing fear in the dog. So when the people now pull out this bottle, the dog is running away. But unfortunately, they've seen an increase in the intensity and the biting that happens outside of the bottle being present. Mm. There is so much appeal and tendency to kind of find a quick fix, like, oh, just one spray of the bottle is going to make all of this go away. But it doesn't.
And what are they doing? Like spraying it into their eyeballs, or
yeah, face, mouth. Uh-huh. So, this didn't work for these people, and now we have to, you know, find something else that the dog can be doing, which can be redirect that dog to playing with a toy, ask that dog to sit, ask that dog to go to their bed, give that dog a chew. We have so many alternatives that we don't really have to go into causing them fear in mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah, and I think it really depends on how you view the dog's actions. If you view everything that they do as something that is trying to piss you off, of course you're going to react that way. But I think if you take a step back and are like, maybe the dog's bored. Maybe the dog is just trying to engage with you in a certain way and doesn't know how to, because there's all these rules of like how a dog is supposed to engage with you that they don't know. And I think if you look at it from that viewpoint, you can be like, okay, well, if he's bored or she's bored, then I should give them something to do as opposed to some of these more things that I don't enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So what other things have you been seeing? What are some common kind of misconceptions?
Another one that I wanted to address is this concept of when you have a young puppy, that it's really beneficial to kind of go and mess with their bowl as they're eating in order to prevent resource guarding from happening. What people do there is puppies eating and they go and they put their hand inside of the food bowl and kind of move it around or try to go and take it away from them. And I think that, again, very outdated type of approach and can really create more trouble with this approach than we're going to gain out of it.
So this dog might already be exhibiting some resource guarding. And so what you're seeing is that, all right, well, I'm going to try to mess with their food bowl and get them used to kind of other people messing with them, and in the hopes that they don't react, or getting them used to kind of triggering them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, whether the dog is a puppy that does not display resource guarding tendencies, or if the dog is already resource guarding, maybe some of the reasoning behind it comes from, you know, dominance alpha theory, that you are the leader and you could go and grab it. But regardless of that, I think that when we do this, first, we are starting to create a negative association with us approaching the dog when the dog is eating. I doubt that they enjoy it when we go to mess with their food. Would you enjoy it if you were trying to eat and then your mom or brother will come and like mess with your food and put their fingers in there or try to take it away? You're not going to be very happy.
Well, depending on my mood, I guess.
Sure. And some dogs can be totally fine and they can be like, sure, human, whatever, like if this is what you feel like doing. But for some other dogs, they really may start to be more protective and kind of anticipate us coming closer to them in a negative light. So my advice there, instead of doing this, is as your dog is eating from their bowl, approach them and toss a piece of something better than what they're eating. For example, if they're eating kibble, go and toss a piece of chicken in there and then walk away.
Oh, in their bowl.
In their bowl.
Yeah.
And do this again and again. And next thing you know, you can bend down and you can still have your hand in there, but place one piece of something better than what they're eating. Mm-hmm. And this way we can create a positive association and almost like create anticipation from the dog looking forward to you coming around them when they're eating, because they learned that this predicts good things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this way we can be a lot more proactive and create the right association that we're looking for.
Interesting. I mean, that makes sense, right? If before I was eating something and then you were messing with it, of course I'm going to get pretty upset. But then if I'm eating something and then you're like, plow down, and you just put like a huge steak there, I'd be like, okay, That's nice. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, what, let's say, for example, not us, but let's say the dog is resource guarding against other dogs. Then what are certain remedies that you recommend there?
The easiest thing will be to feed the dogs in a separate area, mm-hmm. so that we just manage the environment. And if, you know, meal times is when we have the most trouble, just make sure to feed them in different rooms, and then you don't have resource guarding issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you recommend, let's say, at the beginning that they're in totally separate parts of the room, and then gradually you bring them kind of closer together? Or this is kind of a long-term management strategy of like, okay, dog A eats there and dog B eats there, you know, for a long time?
Well, it depends on how much the humans are wanting to be involved in the training. Yes, training can be done with the dogs, but it will be a lot of repetitive, small step approach that I'm not going to go into today's episode in order to kind of fix that.
Well, cool. Anything else that you're commonly seeing when you start these training engagements?
Bopping the nose is something that I occasionally hear about.
Like with the newspaper or something like that, right?
It could be a finger or newspaper. I haven't heard from my clients, but I know that it was like an old school type of advice. Again, connected with whether it's potty accident or biting or even barking. So again, you know, coming from a punishment standpoint to kind of hit the dog on their nose when they're doing the undesirable behavior, which most of the time doesn't bring the desired results. And that's why we need to figure out a different approach there.
So let's talk about something that I see a lot, especially with new puppy owners or new dog owners. I see them trying to teach their dog to sit, trying to teach their dog to lay down. So what I see pretty commonly is the owner being like, sit, and then just pushing the dog's bum down to the ground. And then when the dog does sit because it's being forced to, or he's being forced to, then the owner's pretty happy. But why doesn't that work? You would think that, okay, well, I'm going to help you along a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is almost like if you were learning the dance, but then you were just standing on top of somebody else's feet and mm-hmm. they moved in space.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not a best example.
No, I think that's a good example, actually.
The reason is because the dog, again, is learning to, let's say, sit, which is not ineffective way. A dog can learn to sit in that manner, but again, the dog is sitting because it's trying to avoid an unpleasant experience, which is their body being pushed to the ground. Mm-hmm. So for me, I don't see why I would do this when I can just grab a treat, place it by their nose, and then lift it up in space, get their bum to touch the ground, and then reinforce the dog for sitting. So switch it up instead of using something unpleasant to get the behavior. Make the behavior happen and reinforce it so that next time the dog will do it faster and more willingly than the previous time.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the dance comparison is pretty apt here, right? The teacher wants to teach the person, and you want that person to learn by themselves. But if you're constantly on them, be like, not this way, and then you're pressing their feet down and they're pressing your face down or whatever, you can imagine maybe the moves might be correct, but you gotta ask yourself, is that person, or in this case a dog, are they actually learning this, or just kind of being moved in space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is kind of, we can think of it as when you're reinforcing a behavior, the behavior is coming from within. So the dog is doing the behavior, which is being reinforced, whereas when we're physically molding, it's from without, that we're hoping that then it will register within. Mm-hmm. So I always like to think of training as training smarter, not harder.
Mm-hmm. I mean, related to sitting as well, one thing I see is some people tell their dog to sit and they don't have any treats with them, so they don't reinforce them if the dog does actually sit to let the dog know that's the behavior that they want. They almost think that the dog comes out of the box knowing what sit means. And so they tell their dog to sit and they look at them and the dog is just not sitting. And they're just like getting furious of like, how dare you not sit when I told you to sit? You have to teach your dog how to sit before it learns how to sit. That seems obvious, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk about another one. We wrote about this in one of our blog posts about jumping. And one thing we see a lot, and it's so obvious now that we're talking about it so much, that so much of these tactics are about inflicting pain. It's kind of sad, right?
Yeah.
But the one where...
And this is going to be the last one that we've prepared for today, right?
Yeah. The last one being, the dog jumping up on us, we getting sick of it, and we just... a perfectly timed, like a Mortal Kombat knee to their chest as they're coming up to kind of let them know that this is not a behavior that we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, as you were saying, is the same pattern. The goal is to cause pain or discomfort to the dog as a result of the jumping behavior, and this way decrease the behavior's rate of whatever occurrence.
Yeah.
Well, here... you know, we can be proactive again. And as we see the dog approaching us, we can ask the dog to sit and then reinforce them with our attention and petting while they're sitting. So again, whether it's asking them to sit or touch or spin or lay down, if we can predict that the dog is going to jump, we can surely prevent it too and ask them to do something else. But mm-hmm. again, it is dependent upon us having an alternative behavior in mind that we're going to be asking the dog to be doing in that situation, and really having a plan and being proactive versus reactive when it's already happening.
Yeah, I think a rule of thumb that I've always carried with me from you, which is you can't just always look at behavior in terms of, hey, these are a set of behaviors I just want this dog to stop doing. You gotta ask yourself, okay, well, if I want this dog to stop doing this thing, what is some alternative behavior I could teach him to do instead? And I think that's so apt, and it was such a light bulb moment for me, and I think it's a light bulb moment for a lot of people.
Yep. Instead of the don'ts, let's focus on the do's.
Ooh, love that. Well, great. I think that's enough time for us. Thank you, as always, for your time. I think really pointing out some of these misconceptions is so important, because everyone just knows what they know instead of being like, well, how could you still believe that? But it's more of just like, that's something that you still believe. Let's teach you kind of what the new methodology is for that.
I agree. There is no need to judge. We don't know what we don't know. And then when we do find new information, it's important for us to, you know, take the step of really reconsidering if that's a better way of doing it or a better approach, maybe something that will be more in line with our values or the purpose of this dog in our lives. And then kind of telling to ourselves, okay, well, I'm going to work hard on changing my initial responses, my reactions in those situations, and really being proactive and figuring out what are some other things that I can be teaching that dog in those same scenarios.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes so much sense. And do we want an obedient dog, or do we want to have an actual relationship with this dog? And sometimes they're the same things, but sometimes it's some people just want, hey, I want my dog to do this, and here are all these things I don't want them to do. Well, it's like, this dog is not a machine, right? This dog is a living, breathing being that has been sent from the heavens to our lives, and I think we really should appreciate them for what they bring to our lives. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, thank you. As I said, thank you for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Yes, pleasure chatting.
All right.
Till next time.
Till next time. Bye. Bye. Just listen to the Family Pups podcast with your hosts, Tanya and Charles Lim. Subscribe to our podcast to catch our latest episodes. If you like the show, please make sure to share and review us on your favorite podcast app. And for links to anything we mentioned in the episode, check out our show notes. And don't forget to visit familypups.com/podcast to listen to past episodes of the Family Pups podcast, including episodes on separation anxiety with Melania DeMartini Price, Unpredictable Aggression with Michael Shikashio, Fearful Dogs with Debbie Jacobs, Puppy Socialization with Marge Rogers and Eileen Anderson, and many, many more.